And I have the pleasure to introduce you Philippe Dame, who is here in Geneva, human rights advocate within the Human Rights Watch team, representing Human Rights Watch here in Geneva and working at the Human Rights Council. Actually, Philippe Dame was also before one of the coordinator of the NGO action and activities during the transition from the Commission on Human Rights to the Human Rights Council. And at least in the French team, we discussed that in length yesterday morning. So Philippe Dame has quite an interesting and quite in-depth view of the transition process, the development of the UPR mechanism, and then, of course, how the UPR mechanism have worked during the first cycle. And so the issue we want to talk about this morning is precisely what are the challenges for us as NGOs with the new cycle, with the second cycle. And we are right now in the second session of the second cycle. So we're still at the start of this second cycle. And the passage from the first to the second cycle, of course, brings some challenges for the work of the NGOs. It brings also lessons on which we can build up our coming strategies. So all this are the issues we'd like to talk about this morning. And first, Philippe Dame will do an introduction and we'll have the possibility to have a small discussion. And then I'll complete with other elements in the second part of this morning. So Philippe, the floor is yours. And once again, thank you for being with us for these training sessions.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. It's always a pleasure to join the groups of CFIDOP for these trainings. So I understand that this is the first session. So we will, I guess, we'll rather try to be thinking together and trying to bring some questions for reflections to the group. And of course, going from the first cycle to the second cycle of the UPR raises a number of questions. Of how NGOs need to engage with the mechanism. Maybe three comments. First, now that the first cycle is over, we should now understand that all of the actors which are engaged within the UPR now have a real experience of what it is and how it works. We have to go away from the learning period, which was kind of marking the first cycle of the UPR. Governments now know how to how the mechanism should be prepared, how the review does work. They also know how to perform well, but they also know how to manipulate the process and prevent the process from being effective. Okay, I can't see you with the microphone. So on the other side, NGOs do know how to lobby for their inputs and recommendations to be reflected into the debate. NGOs have learned what is an effective consultation process with their governments before the review. NGOs have learned how to coordinate their inputs, and now we will have to capitalize on what we learn to make the process more effective. One of the good lessons from the first cycle is to know exactly when NGOs should advocate or should lobby governments, should lobby the other governments to transmit their messages and ensure that recommendations are reflected. For example, at the beginning of the first cycle, we were not sure about how to do it, and now it's quite clear that you should lobby other governments between 4 and 6 weeks before the actual reviews of your own states. NGOs can do it in Geneva, but also in your own countries, and that was not something which was obvious at the beginning of the UPR. We also all have a better understanding that more should be done to approach your own governments to ensure that consultation processes in the preparation of the state report have to respect a number of criteria of inclusiveness, of involvement of a large number of NGOs and addressing a number of issues, which was also not the case before. And we have also learned how to engage the media better. One of the lessons that I've been seeing from the first, let's say, two sessions of the working groups of the UPR in May and now is the fact that more and more NGOs use the media, but also social media, to give more visibility to the UPR, which was not necessarily the case for the first cycle. I mean, many of my colleagues and our colleagues have been tweeting, using Facebook and using other devices to make the UPR a more visible tool domestically. And I think this is also one of the results of the lessons learned from the first cycle. A second general point I wanted to make is that while we know how the mechanism works, we also know what it doesn't work for, and we also can be more pragmatic about what we can achieve. I mean, it's now clear for everybody that the UPR is not an international human rights court, that it is not a mechanism which is imposing itself to governments reviewed. I mean, governments can are still the ones, the state under review, sorry, still the one running the show by having one third of the time during the debate, by bringing its own information in a quite uncontested way, by being able to manipulate the process by bringing as many friends as possible as part of the debate. And therefore, we also learned how to be pragmatically engaging with the mechanism and understanding that the outcome of the UPR is never completely black or completely white, but it's always like something in the middle that we can use. We also know that the recommendations accepted by the government are often quite vague and difficult to measure, which raises challenge for their implementation domestically. What does a recommendation, which means improve freedom of expression, means in each domestic context? That's quite difficult, and we have to find ways to articulate that and to give life to these kind of recommendations. And we also all know that the impact of the UPR will always remain relative. Even recommendations which have been accepted and which have been implemented in the course of the cycle may have been implemented without the UPR. On the other side, maybe some recommendations, we also see that some recommendations which are rejected are actually implemented. So has the UPR had an impact by putting pressure on the governments or not? I mean, there are many questions which are raised on the actual impact of the UPR, but from an NGO perspective, it remains a very important tool to ensure that your governments, your respective governments, are actually engaging with their domestic constituencies, but also with their international partners on human rights issues. It does create a debate at various levels. It does push for more transparency, for more accountability of your governments, and also for pushing your respective governments to take formal engagements or pledges on human rights issues, which may not happen without the UPR. So in itself, NGOs have learned to be more pragmatic and to use the UPR as a tool in quite functionalistic manner, rather than seeing it as a solution to our problems. My third series of comments will be, so now how do we work to at the national level to prepare for the second cycle? I will repeat the sentence that maybe many of you have already heard, but the UPR should be mostly a domestic, a national process with one moment in Geneva. A UPR can be really successful if it works at home, if the government is receptive, if consultations are broadly organized by the government with NGOs before the review, if NGOs coordinate their action or at least strategize their actions to be effective, and if after the UPR, NGOs continue to put pressure on the government for the actual implementation of these recommendations. So it should really be a domestic process which has one moment of visibility at the international level, of visibility but also of accountability. I don't know if you guys went to the UPR InfoSight event yesterday at the UN. Okay. There was a quite nice sentence by the NGO representative of the panel. Francesca said something like, what will be important for the UPR is to move, to shift from being a peer review mechanism to being a peer engagement mechanism. And so far we only could see, that's true, we only could see states talking to, well, sorry, I will rephrase. We could mostly see one state talking to a lot of states and a lot of states talking back to the government reviewed. And we should move away from just this exchange of sometimes different realities To see the UPR as a mechanism where a state is forced to respond to recommendations, make engagements, and be held accountable for respecting these engagements or not. And that's maybe what we have to work for during the second cycle, making our own governments understand that it's not only a review, an examination with a positive or a negative results, but it's mostly a space where your governments are expected to make pledges and to respect them in the course of the cycle. The difficulty is really to measure implementation for two reasons. First of all, because most of the recommendations are really vague, it's difficult to say if a vague recommendation has been implemented fully, partially, if some of the steps taken actually mean that the recommendation is implemented, or actually if those steps are irrelevant in the context of measuring the implementation of the UPR. And that will be, I guess, the main difficulty for the second cycle. How much can we really do to measure implementation is really the big question. But maybe we don't necessarily need to respond to that in detail, and maybe that's the approach of my organization, but what we have to do, I guess, as NGOs towards the second cycle is to use the way in which we can analyze the progresses or step backwards which happened during the first cycle of the UPR to make our suggested recommendations more relevant for the second cycle. And I guess that states are much more receptive to the calls from NGOs to make recommendations more specific, but mostly more measurable to make sure that the implementation can be followed up appropriately. And what we learned during the first cycle that many diplomats don't have the capacity to analyze exactly what would be a good recommendation or not, and therefore it is our job to finger point at which laws have to be amended, which policies have to be changed, and with which reforms, instead of just leaving it very broad to leaving a very broad understanding to government that there are problems, but we should go beyond spotting at the problems by identifying how to solve actually these problems. And that, I guess, will be the challenge for all of us for the second cycle, now that we have a quite good basis, a quite good roadmap coming from the first UPRs. We have to give life to this roadmap by making benchmarks much more clear and much more measurable.